This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of the Battle of Chile, a discussion with Dr. Oscar Soto on Patricio Guzman's 1975 film of the same title. It took place on June 9th, 2010.
Good evening. Welcome to Cabinet. Very happy to have you here for the screening of the second part of the Battle of Chile. We just screened the first part, and there are three parts of the film, as you might know. We are especially happy to have with us here tonight Dr. Oscar Soto, who is the author of the book, the copies of which are over there, The Last Day of Salvador Allende. And the book is in a second printing, printed by a Spanish house. Is that correct? By a Spanish publisher. And Dr. Soto lives in Spain, and we're very fortunate to have him here. He's traveling to Washington and agreed to come up for the screening. And joining him tonight is Andrea Nagel, who's going to be translating for us, and Christian Viveros-Fone, who's going to be talking to Dr. Soto. The plan for the evening is that we're going to have a brief discussion, and then we're going to screen the film, and then we'll come back to Q&A. At the end of the after the film. So I'm going to hand over to you.
So I think we've, since the next part of the film is the actual coup, we've sort of come to the right person to speak to us about what that day was like. I know what it was like for me. I was about 9 years old at the time, and I actually remember a great deal. I remember hearing martial songs on the radio. I remember being on somebody's roof and seeing jets drop bombs. I remember the general panic that enveloped all the grown-ups, and certainly sort of remember the fact that days afterwards we really couldn't go out of the house, and again that folks were upset, I guess would be sort of the minimal word. Dr. Oscar Soto was actually there inside the presidential palace, inside the Moneda, and he was one of the last people, among other things, to see Salvador Allende alive. He was Allende's personal doctor. And as such, a real witness to history, which is one of the reasons we're here to essentially hear about that sort of fateful day, as it were, from the horse's mouth. I heard Terry Eagleton say the other day on a little sort of a YouTube clip that Americans have their 9/11, Chileans certainly have theirs. For those unfortunate to have basically sort of like lived both in Santiago in 1973 and have gone through 9/11 here in New York, well, you know, I guess we're sort of shit out of luck. I would sort of ask, before we get to the movie, in this brief discussion, this brief interlude that we're going to have now, and that we'll return to after we see the movie, something very basic, Dr. Soto, and that is, what compelled you to write the book?
¿Qué te motivó a escribir el libro?
Bien, excusen, yo solo hablo español. Y el principal motivo para escribir este libro fue que, como resultado de esa batalla que ocurrió el día 11 de septiembre del 73 en Santiago, en el Palacio de la Moneda, un grupo importante de aquellos civiles que acompañaron al presidente Salvador Allende en esta batalla, fueron detenidos por los militares, fueron trasladados a un regimiento de Santiago, el llamado Regimiento Tacna, y posteriormente llevados a un recinto a unos 25 kilómetros de Santiago, que se llama Colina, es un pequeño municipio.
Dejemos que la traducción.
So, in solidarity with the many civilians who participated in the battle alongside President Allende, who were then arrested and taken to Taina in Colina, a town a certain distance from Santiago.
Y ellos fueron allí fusilados. Fueron asesinados sin mediar ningún juicio ni ninguna otra cosa más que la decisión de los participantes en el golpe militar. Como sus nombres, como sus vidas, iban, he pensado yo, a ser relativamente ignoradas por los acontecimientos posteriores de la historia chilena, me pareció que era necesario rendirles un homenaje a ellos por su defensa de los principios democráticos que habían planteado acompañando al presidente constitucional del país.
So, Dr. Oscar Soto feels that once these people were taken, they were shot, and for no other reason than defending democracy and the principles of democracy. And so he feels a tremendous commitment to ensuring that their stories are shared.
Porque a pesar de las imágenes que ustedes vieron en la primera parte de la batalla de Chile y que a lo mejor supongo que estarán también en la segunda parte del combate de la moneda, y en ese combate solamente hubo dos muertos, el presidente Salvador Allende y un periodista, Augusto Olivares, que era el director de la Televisión Nacional y que se suicidó en esa mañana. El resto de los que estuvimos ahí, solamente en ese proceso, hubo tres heridos graves, pero ni una muerte más. Los militares, a pesar del ataque por tierra y el bombardeo, etcétera, no causaron ninguna muerte. Los muertos de la Batalla de la Moneda son posteriores, son asesinatos de personas que estaban ya vivos y que fueron ejecutados, como dije, sin mediar ningún juicio legal ni nada por el estilo.
So, there were two people who died in the presidential palace. Presidente Allende and the director of the National Television, Augusto Olivares, who actually committed suicide. There were three people who were gravely injured, but most of the people who died subsequently in the violence that ensued. And they were, many were assassinated and without trial or any legal process.
Bueno,
¿cuál fue la recepción? What was the reception to the book in Chile? It was published in 1998. ¿Cuál fue la recepción en Chile de este libro?
Sí. La primera edición de este libro fue publicada en Madrid en 1998, a los 25 años del golpe militar. Y se publicaron dos sucesivas ediciones que se vendieron en Madrid y algunos ejemplares que se enviaron a Latinoamérica, no particularmente a Chile. En 1999 se hizo una edición chilena similar a esa en Chile de 4.000 ejemplares que fue vendida en su totalidad. Esta nueva edición Tiene 2 años, del 2008, y no es solamente una repetición de la primera, sino que contiene elementos que fueron agregados al relato, porque está, por ejemplo, incorporado en esta edición el ataque aéreo con misiles que se hizo contra la casa personal, la vivienda personal del presidente Salvador Allende, donde estaba morando, vivía su esposa Hortensia Bussi. Esa parte no estaba en la primera edición y está incorporada a esta. Así como algunos detalles más que son muy significativos sobre la complicidad de las instituciones chilenas en ocultar y desfigurar la suerte corrida por aquellas personas asesinadas. Casi todos aquellos, los restos de casi todas aquellas personas asesinadas han terminado arrojados al Pacífico, al mar, porque fueron removidos por la dictadura de Pinochet, sacados en bolsas adecuadas y trasladadas en helicóptero al mar Pacífico y fueron lanzados al mar. No serán nunca serán encontrados, son desaparecidos, no habrá entierros ni nada para sus familiares porque la dictadura se preocupó de hacerlos desaparecer incluso materialmente.
So the question about the reception of the book in Chile in 1998, it was released in 25 years after the coup, and there were 2 editions that circulated in parts of Latin America and in Spain. In 1999, there was another Chilean edition of 4,000 copies that were sold immediately. This latest version that there are copies of here was published in 2008. And this new edition actually has some new elements in it. And one of them shows some of the story about the aerial attack, missile attacks, on Allende's actual home, which was not included as part of the story in the first edition. And there's also more details shared about the complicity of Chilean institutions as it relates to the disappearance, the execution and the disappearances of many people whose bodies were actually thrown into the ocean during the dictatorship as a way to disappear them so that they could not be recovered and or honorably buried.
Mm-hmm. As a last question before we essentially go to the film, this is a remarkably dispassionate book, a very objective book. Mm-hmm. I wonder, is it history, or is it also personal history?
Es que.
Sí, me parece un libro tremendamente objetivo, escrito con un punto de vista objetivo.
Yes.
Con gran esfuerzo a mantener una objetividad y no calentar el lenguaje.
Yes.
¿En qué medida es este libro historia y en qué medida es este libro historia personal?
No, the book is only history, is historia. No personal. Trasladé los testimonios de los sobrevivientes e hice el relato, lo escribí. Pero lo que allí figura es solamente histórico. No hay ni sentimientos ni opiniones personales, ni nada que se falte a la verdad. Todo lo que ahí está escrito es absolutamente historia, nada más.
As you heard Dr. Soto say, it's all history, it's all facts, it's all testimonies in particular of 2 survivors, and that he didn't express a lot of personal sentiments or opinions on things that happened. It's really telling the story as it happened and unfolded.
How did you come to work for Salvador Allende? ¿Cómo es que usted llegó a trabajar
con Salvador Allende?
What was it like? ¿Cómo era?
Entonces, la primera es muy concreta, la segunda ya es más difícil.
Okay. The first answer is very concrete, the second one's a little
more. He sido médico cardiólogo en hospital público en Santiago.
He's been a cardiologist, he was a cardiologist at a public hospital.
Yes. Y era muy amigo de una hija de Salvador Allende, Beatriz, que era médico, más joven que yo, pero médico, amigo.
And he was friends with Beatriz or Tati,
is that right? Tati,
who was also a doctor. Sí. He was very friendly.
Sí. Y entonces, durante su campaña electoral, presidencial, él tuvo un episodio anginoso, una angina de pecho, angor pectoris. ¿No?
During the presidential campaign, he actually had an episode of angina.
Yes. Y entonces su hija y él me llamaron para atenderlo. Esto ocurrió aproximadamente en mayo de 1970.
Right about May 1970, sí. when this event happened, occurred, Matisse called Dr. Soto, sí, to basically go and help somebody.
Y desde entonces yo continúo siendo su médico de cabecera. Y lo veía frecuentemente, una vez a la semana más o menos, médicamente, y como amigo con más frecuencia, y lo acompañé en varios de sus viajes al extranjero. Incluso estuvimos aquí en el año 72 en Nueva York, en las Naciones Unidas. Estuvimos aquí.
From that point forward he became both a friend and essentially Allende's doctor, so much so that he followed him throughout the campaign and also on trips. In fact, he was here in 1972 with Allende, when Allende came to the United Nations.
Interesante porque en esa el delegado de Estados Unidos en las Naciones Unidas era George Bush padre.
Interesting because, I don't know if you got that, most of you probably did, the delegate in front of before the United Nations to the United States was George Bush, father, not George, sí, not W.
Y el día, la noche que llegamos al aeropuerto, nos alojamos ese día en el hotel el Waldorf Astoria, y tuve yo oportunidad de estar con Salvador Allende cuando George Bush llegó al hotel a conversar con él para pedirle que modificara algunas partes del discurso que al día siguiente Allende iba a dar en las Naciones Unidas.
So Dr. Soto was actually present at the Waldorf Astoria, which is where they were staying for the UN for that particular UN conference, when Bush Pair came to basically ask Salvador Allende fairly unequivocally to modify the speech, which was fairly condemnatory of the United States and the CIA specifically. Y bueno, muy simpático, ¿no es cierto?
Allende.
No, Bush.
Bush? No, yo lo vi a dos o tres metros. No tuve ninguna relación directa con él, no. No, yo estaba ahí presente cuando conversaban ellos dos, no.
He can't tell us whether a George Bush pair was a particularly nice guy. But Allende, ¿cómo era como persona?
Allende era, era una persona con... con mucho sentido del humor, pero bastante firme en sus convicciones. Digamos, lo atendió muy amablemente, porque Bush le manifestó que ese discurso no podía estar presente en la sala de la delegación de Estados Unidos, porque el discurso era un ataque a Estados Unidos.
Bush basically let Allende know that in the event of his giving the unabridged speech, that the United States would have to be absent essentially from the room, and they would have to, that's it. And by their lack of presence, essentially condemn the proceedings.
Pero Allende le dijo que eso no era un ataque al gobierno ni al pueblo americano,
sino que era un ataque a las transnacionales, a las compañías transnacionales que él consideraba que no eran exactamente el pueblo americano.
Allende led Pousteau, of course, that the speech was really not directed at the people of the United States, but rather was really directed towards the multinational corporations, which were acting against the interests of Chile.
En concreto, el discurso no se modificó y al día siguiente por la mañana la delegación americana no estuvo en la asamblea.
So concretely, Allende didn't change the speech one bit, and the United States was not present for that particular bit of history. And so there you have it.
Was Bush the head of the CIA before or after this moment? Just
after.
He was. Yeah, he was the head of the CIA after. Anybody else want to jump in with questions, or I'll just sort of like keep going?
Yeah. I have a question. Where is Cuba in the midst of the international drama?
¿Entendió? ¿Dónde está Cuba en medio de todo este drama internacional?
A ver, Allende era amigo de Fidel Castro y de fundamentalmente de, digamos, de Che Guevara. Se conocían como líderes políticos latinoamericanos. Nosotros estuvimos en La Habana de visita y a su vez Fidel Castro estuvo en Chile cerca de un mes visitando Chile de norte a sur.
Allende was personally friends with Castro. He was even better friends with Che Guevara. Dr. Soto and Allende spent ¿cuánto tiempo en La Habana?
En 3 días, digo.
Three days in Havana, basically, meeting all kinds of sundry people. Castro came to Chile.
30
días. Where he spent basically about a month traveling up and down the length of Chile, accompanied by Dr. Soto a significant amount of the time. Acompañado por usted también.
Sí, sí. Yo en el viaje que él hizo de Santiago al extremo sur, yo fui con Allende, me mandó como médico de acompañando a Fidel Castro.
So Allende actually sent Dr. Soto with Castro down to the south of Chile. So they made that trip together.
Allende y Fidel también, creo yo, tenían la convicción de que los procesos eran evidentemente en dos países de características sociopolíticas absolutamente distintas y de hábitos políticos muy distintos. Chile era una democracia consolidada que cambiaba sus proyectos, hacía sus proyectos por vía electoral. Y la vía cubana fue una vía de guerrilla contra Batista y después así una vía que no ha permitido el desarrollo democrático, esa es la verdad.
In spite of their differences, the Chile being essentially a country that was striving to arrive at socialism via democratic process, via totally democratic process, and Cuba obviously being a country that essentially tried to arrive at some of the same goals through a guerrilla movement. Both Castro and Allende believed in historical processes, if we sort of remember what the kind of language meant back in the early 70s.
Eran amigos personales, pero no coincidían políticamente en varios aspectos, muchas cosas.
They were personal friends, and I think this is important to underscore. But they did not necessarily see eye to eye in terms of the methods to use to basically arrive at their respective visions of socialism.
I forgot. I was just how long did you work for Salvador? How long did you work for the president?
I think it's probably 3 years. ¿Cuántos años trabajó usted con Salvador Allende, con el presidente?
Desde como médico personal desde mayo del 1970 al 11 de septiembre del 73.
So May 1970 to 9/11/73. Allende era un demócrata, ¿cierto? Mm-hmm.
Sí, sí.
¿Tenía algún ápice de marxista-leninista?
Allende tenía una formación ideológica de varias
vertientes. What I just asked Dr. Cerda is was Allende a Democrat? This is a sort of fundamental question about the entire setup. You know, did he have leanings towards Marxism-Leninism?
Tenía una base marxista como su partido, el Socialista de Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Tenía una orientación ideológica vinculada a la masonería, era masón, y la masón actuante, o sea, de detenidas semanales que iba a la masonería, y era agnóstico, no era católico, era como la mayor parte del pueblo chileno, no era católico. Y yo diría que básicamente era eso.
Okay. Dr. Soto says that the sort of the cocktail that made up the idea, Allende's ideology, was essentially the fact that he was clearly a Marxist. He had Marxist ideals to the degree that he belonged and was the leader of the Socialist Party. In Chile, not the Communist Party, the Socialist Party. He was a Mason, which is sort of an interesting thing to consider. My grandfather was a Mason, and in Chile, the Masons were old-time Masons. They were essentially sort of, for the most part, either agnostic or atheistic type folks who were professionals and then the third part of the cocktail was essentially that he was an agnostic. And in a country of Catholics, in a country that's still dominated by Catholics, that's an important ingredient in this man's sort of ideological makeup. Para despejar algo clave, to bore in on something that I think is key and which was problematic for a long time in the Chilean left, and which is not made particularly clear in the movie, and which is a fundamental part of Dr. Soto's book, I'm going to ask Dr. Soto how Allende died. Because again, that is not clear in the movie. And I think we've all probably heard different stories, and we all may have some sense of whether we know one thing or the other, but the man was on the spot. So, ¿cómo murió Allende?
Allende se suicidó.
Allende committed suicide.
Pero durante mucho tiempo
con la metralleta.
Sí, con la metralleta que andaba, que se veía aquí.
With the machine gun that he was carrying
que le había regalado Fidel Castro.
Which was given to him personally by Fidel Castro.
Yeah. Pero el 28 de septiembre de 1973, en La Habana, en la Plaza de la Revolución, Fidel Castro dio una versión de lo que en el Palacio de la Moneda había ocurrido, que no era cierta, que no era verdadera.
The 28th of September in Havana, Fidel Castro gave a version of what had happened in La Moneda and in Chilean President's Palace, which was not truthful, which was false.
Esa versión también la recogieron, esa versión en la izquierda latinoamericana tenía un enorme peso ideológico, peso, importancia. Los militares mataron a Allende. Era muy, muy significativo.
That particular version had an enormous amount of weight for the decades to come among the Latin American left and among the international left. And the line was essentially that the members of the army had killed Allende.
Y García Márquez la recogió también en octubre de ese año, más o menos, en un relato. ¿Quiénes mataron a Allende?
García Márquez also took up the same story, the same essential falsehood, probably without himself knowing that it was a falsehood, in a story called Who Killed Allende?
La opinión del doctor Soto y de otros que estaban ahí no tenía la importancia frente a estas impresionantes opiniones.
The facts as relayed by Dr. Soto and others who were actually witnesses to the event couldn't match the star power of the interlocutors for this particular falsehood internationally.
Hasta que se recogió en este libro la opinión de los sobrevivientes que vivieron eso y se publicó. Y luego, en 1992, el cementerio Santa Inés de Valparaíso, donde subrepticiamente se enterró a Salvador Allende, se desenterró a Salvador Allende. Se hizo el desentierro para trasladarlo a Santiago. Quedó aclarado todo.
So it's not until, to some degree, the publication of Dr. Soto's book, the issuing of this history by the people who actually lived it, who were on the spot, and the exhumation of Salvador Allende's body. In the Santa Inés Cemetery in Valparaíso in 1992, and reburial in Santiago, that this became accepted fact.
Patricio Guzmán dice, murió Allende. No, no sé si murió Allende.
See, Patricio Guzmán says Allende died. He doesn't obviously specify in any particular way. There's a question here, back here, I think.
Yeah. I was curious, I'm not sure if the film sort of explains it that well, but curious about the sort of ideological makeup of the sort of opposing parties and sort of also more in depthly the sort of Christian Democrats, which seem to be really important in terms of where the country might sort of move towards and how it sort of might have ended up becoming a coup. It's not clear like exactly why the sort of talks break down. I mean, it's sort of clear, but it's not, you don't quite understand what their ideological positions are. I was wondering if Dr. Soto could speak to that.
Su pregunta, lo que no entiende básicamente es el porqué del cese de conversación entre la democracia cristiana y la UP. Y lo que no entiende en particular es un poco las características propias de la democracia cristiana. Y también de su arraigo con la clase media, que creo que es parte de lo que necesita saber.
La democracia cristiana es un partido político en Chile que es una rama del viejo, antiguo Partido Conservador de derecha.
Christian Democratic Party in Chile is an old splinter of the Conservative Party of Chile.
Inicialmente se llama como un partido español Falange Nacional.
Its original name is National Falange. Now, if you know your Spanish or Italian history, falanges tended to turn out fascist. In this case, it didn't.
No era exactamente fascista.
En este caso no era fascista.
Sí. Y enseguida se denomina el Partido Demócrata Cristiano. El reemplaza en Chile a un partido que tiene una importancia grande entre 1940 y yo diría y 60, que es el sí, 60, que es el Partido Radical, que es el partido de la clase media.
What it winds up replacing, basically for the period 1940-1960, is the Radical Party, which was before the Christian Democratic Party, in essence, the middle-class party. Now, we have to consider again that this is in a country that is ostensibly largely middle-class.
Es un partido básicamente católico, pero no es el partido de la Iglesia. La Iglesia chilena nunca ha tenido un partido político propio de ella.
It's a Catholic party, but it is not the party of the Church. The Church has never really been aligned to any one particular party in Chile.
Y en el año 1964, seis años antes del triunfo electoral de Salvador Allende, Eduardo Frei Montalva, demócrata cristiano, saca el 54% de los votos como presidente, mayoría absoluta.
In 1964, right before, it's a previous presidential mandate in Chile. The mandates were 6 years at the time. Eduardo Frei, who is the candidate for the Christian Democratic Party, wins an absolute majority, 54%. This is obviously in a parliamentary system. That's an enormous vote.
Cuando Frei entrega el poder presidencial a Salvador Allende, son íntimos amigos personales, son incluso Salvador Allende ha sido el padrino matrimonial de una de sus hijas, muy, muy íntimamente.
In fact, Chilean democracy is so cozy by 1970 that Eduardo Frei and Salvador Allende are actually significantly good friends, so much so that Allende has stood in as a witness at one of Frei Montalva's daughter's marriage.
Pero en el curso del gobierno de Allende, Frei comienza a creerse una cosa que le han dicho la derecha, que Eduardo Frei es el Kerensky chileno, porque va a permitir el triunfo del Lenin Allende en Chile. Es cierto responsable.
So, sometime between the period of 1970 and 1973, Frei begins to believe what a number of people are telling him, and that is that he's essentially going to be go down to history as the Chilean Kerensky to Allende's Lenin.
Durante los acuerdos iniciales que Allende lograba con Elwin, presidente de la Democracia Cristiana, Frei los terminaba.
Every time there was an agreement with Patricio Elwin, who was then president of the party, between Allende and the government and Patricio Elwin and the Christian Democrats, Frei essentially kiboshed them.
So. Y los primeros meses de la dictadura de Pinochet, Frei apoya la dictadura como una cosa necesaria.
In the first months of the junta's rule, Frei and the Christian Democratic Party essentially support the regime.
Cuando Frei cambia y se hace anti-Pinochet, Pinochet parece, en eso hay ya un proceso legal, parece que contribuye a su muerte.
When Frei actually sort of turns against the military junta, particularly in the person of Augusto Pinochet Ugarte, it is entirely possible that Pinochet, through the powers of the state, contributes to his death. It's actually in the courts now in Chile, and there's a good, there's a real likelihood that he was actually assassinated. No one really knows yet. There's a lawsuit actually in the courts right now in Chile that Frey's family has brought against Pinochet and his collaborators.
I think we have time for one more question. I actually would like to ask myself. I'm sorry. And then we can have wine and continue the discussions in informal ways. I wondered if Dr. Soto can talk a little bit about the Spanish court where the extradition orders for Pinochet were given, and a little bit about that process. I know it's a complicated process, and when did that process start, and what were some of the... I know that court's also been more or less disbanded at this point, time, so...
Lo
de Baltasar, último.
No, lo último no. Lo del juicio contra Pinochet.
Ah, bueno.
¿Qué importancia tuvo, por ejemplo, la apertura de Magdalena?
Una unión de fiscales españoles hicieron un juicio, presentaron un juicio en el Tribunal Supremo de España en contra de Pinochet por genocidio.
As some of you know, there was a group of attorneys general, which are also judges in Spain, that brought a case up at the international court, in Spanish courts, against Pinochet for genocide.
Durante varios años, Garzón, responsable de ese juicio, de ese proceso, reunió todas las pruebas y pidió en su momento cursó una orden internacional de detención.
Baltasar Garzón spent years basically coming up with proof of this particular crime of genocide. And then he issued an international arrest warrant for Pinochet.
En 1998, Pinochet, muy confiado de que no había posibilidades de nada contra él, se fue a Londres y se operó de la columna.
In 1998, Pinochet, with full confidence that he wouldn't be touched, that he was absolutely made of Teflon, went to England to be operated for
un disco? Sí, una discopatía.
A herniated disc.
Y en ese momento, Garzón cursó la orden de detención y arraigo en...
And he was arrested, as you all know. ¿Y qué importancia tuvo eso en la apertura de la democracia en Chile? I'm asking how much importance it made in the bringing about a democracy in Chile. And he says a great deal.
A raíz de eso, la gente perdió el miedo en Chile. Perdió el miedo. Y no había ninguna querella por fusilamientos o desaparecidos o tortura. Y a partir de ese momento, los afectados comenzaron a presentar sucesivas demandas contra los responsables que estaban identificados. Y se abrió todo un enorme proceso, una enorme cantidad de procesos que han sido efectivos, que han sido importantes.
Dr. Soto says essentially what happened in Chile is that people lost the fear. Immediately after Pinochet was arrested in a country where there had been no accusation, no legal accusations leveled at any of the responsible parties for torture, the disappearance of people, murder, suddenly those cases began to really sort of bubble up and multiple cases began to sort of like be opened against Pinochet and other responsible parties.
El proceso, el paso de la dictadura a la democracia en Chile fue un proceso pactado entre las fuerzas políticas y las fuerzas militares.
the transition to democracy in Chile was essentially pactado,
negociado.
Was essentially negotiated between the army and the political parties.
Y una condición básica fue que no se iba a hacer nada en derechos humanos contra los militares.
And one of the basic conditions is that the military, the armed forces, not to be touched on the subject of human rights.
Entonces Garzón abrió el cofre y las asociaciones de familiares afectados salieron. No los partidos políticos, ni el comunista, ni el socialista, no. Los familiares.
And so once Baltasar Garzón issued this arrest warrant and Pinochet was captured, it was not the political parties that impelled this process of opening up and actually sort of like issuing cases, but it was the families themselves, the families of the disappeared, the families of murdered people, and family associations. So.
Thank you so much. Please join me in thanking Christian and Dr. Sullivan.